This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Emily Thompson from Bronxville, New York, and you are listening to a special jumping edition of Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for November 4th, episode 1034. This episode is brought to you by S Equestrian. Good morning, Horse World.
Oh my God, it's Tuesday.
It's top-class show jumping at the very best.
Every horse is different, and you've got to be able to understand and read each different horse.
Remember, we're looking for those clears in this round to go forward to the jump-off.
You can't ask for anything more. It's just pure theatre.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning, Election Day. Everybody get out and vote today. Emily, you don't even have a permanent residence. You can't vote anywhere.
I know. It's so funny when we do our opening and I say where I'm from. I'm like, that's, I guess, the way of the horse person. You're like, that's the most stressful part of my my application filling out. Where do I live? What is my residence?
Yeah, especially you jumper people. You jumper people are on the road all the time. You're just you don't really have a home.
No. I mean, if you do, it's only 6 months, which does that even qualify? Because it's like a full six-month split, you know?
Huh. So but what do you call home? I mean, what state do you put as an address when you have to put it on a legal box, on your tax return?
I will use my mom's address.
In New York?
In New York, yeah. Which, you know, I think I'm going to be moving to Florida, after all, in light of all the recent events. So it will probably be calling Florida. We have a house down there. My mom does. So we have dual residency.
You're right. The life of a gypsy jumper.
Oh, yeah. You got to be hardcore. You got to be all in.
That's a great name for a new radio show, The Gypsy Jumper. That's a good name for a radio show. You have to keep that in mind. We are here for the jumping episode, the first Tuesday of every month. Hard to believe it's Tuesday of November already. But we are here, and Emily is here. Now, it's good to talk to you again. Jamie filled in the last time. I was out and about and traveling. So Jamie filled in the last couple of months, but I missed my Emily time.
I know. It's fun. I do love Jamie, so that was great, too. But I know we have a blast, and then we're going to see each other January at Ada.
Yes, that's right. Well, we're going to see you sooner than that because you'll be coming to Florida, and we'll get to visit when you're down here.
So we'll get to see you much sooner than that.
And Emily has agreed, because she is so kind and so lovely, to come back tomorrow morning as the celebrity for her second attempt at celebrity trivia. Now, if I remember right, you got your ass kicked the last time. So.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad. I mean, people were blowing up my Facebook like, you missed that? It was Apple. Like, I don't know. I mean, I have an Apple computer, you know, like I had no excuse. But, hey, it'll probably be just like that again, those of you that know me. I'll probably lose. I'll lose in style.
I'll burn Jennifer's ear to give you good, easy questions, okay?
Okay. That was pretty easy. What is a horse's favorite computer? Come on. Everybody was like, you are outrageous that you couldn't get that.
You know what, though? And Jamie and I have both played now. And when you're playing, it's harder.
It is.
It's harder. Yeah, the pressure's on. I do have one of our listeners going to be joining us for celebrity trivia tomorrow, too. I just confirmed her. So we'll be we'll be back tomorrow morning for that. But let's first find out. We can't talk long. You have a jam-packed show today. Jennifer, what's coming?
Okay.
On today's S Equestrian Densely Packed with Guests Jumping episode, we've got Jennifer Blumenthal with the latest show jumping news. Sue Vanderline talks about writing a blog. Luann Smith stops by with the EquestrianCorner.com product of the month. Kevin Battington talks about nutrition and passing through the timer at a full gallop. John Manning has a training tip. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Oh, you missed Lynn Reed at the end. She's at the end.
Oh,
she's
man.
She's a breeder.
Sorry, Lynn. No time for you.
No, we need Lynn. She's one of our faves.
Well, before we get
it
on with the show here, it is. You have a lot of guests booked here today. We'll see how you do. You have to talk fast, Emily. Talk
fast. All right,
fast.
We keep it moving.
Yeah, you're from New York. That's not a problem.
Yep, for now.
Before we go on, we have to talk about one thing. You know, we're in the world of radio. Yes, we're online radio, but I still consider us radio. And, you know, when you're talking radio, there are two personalities, and that is Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers from Car Talk, Tom and his brother Ray, who have become institutions in the world of radio and comedy over the last 25 years. Jennifer and I have listened to them since they started. It's the only NPR show I actually listen to. And I think, you know, I can't tell you the number of road trips that Jennifer and I have been on where we've just played nothing but Car Talk after Car Talk after Car Talk. And Tom, the older brother on Car Talk, and he's the one with the laugh. Everybody recognized him as the one with the laugh. He and told the jokes and did all of that. He died yesterday at the age of 77. They stopped doing the shows about 2 years ago. They never really said why, other than they were retiring. Well, it came out that he had Alzheimer's, and he died of complications of Alzheimer's. So, and actually, that, you know, some people live with Alzheimer's for a very long time. So the fact that they only retired 2 years ago says that it progressed really, really quickly. But he is certainly going to be missed. He's an institution in radio. Even if you didn't care about cars, and I don't, I really could care less about fixing cars. I've never fixed one car in my life, and it didn't matter, because it was just, you just listened to hear those two and the callers. It was so much fun. And I know we have that, we all that are in radio that and performing aspire to be half as good as those guys. If we're half as good as those guys, we're successful. So our best to the family and everybody up there in Massachusetts, Harvard Square, in East Cambridge, Massachusetts. They're a close-knit Italian family. And I didn't realize that Tom was 12 years older than his brother Ray. I always thought it was just a couple years older. But he had 12 years on him. So
yeah, that's what my mom said too. She was surprised by that.
Yeah, I think because when you hear them on the radio, they sounded like they were about the same age.
Yeah.
Younger people will remember them from the movie Cars. They actually made cameo appearances in the movie Cars. So, yeah, they were in that as well. But, yep, so that's a sad day in radio and in general. But I wanted to give a shout-out to the family up there in Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
Well, now,
awesome,
before we get to our first guest, what have you been up to? I know you've been hanging around New York, but I also know that the jumping season has ended up there.
Yes, it has ended, which this is sort of that no man's land time in between Florida and New York. Some people call it the holidays. We horse people call it the Great Migration. So we're waiting. Some people have already left. There's a stream of trailers. We're hitching a ride the third week in November, so we'll be leaving, but gearing up to that, it's a great time if you have young horses, which I do baby horses, to sort of get your horses in shape for the next season. So you guys kind of know, been tracking our developing with the little black stallion, and he's coming along. So we're hoping that he's going to do the five-year-old jumpers down in Wellington. So fingers crossed, he's maybe close. You never quite know when they're four coming five. You're like, we're either really close or really far away. I can't tell. But a couple more weeks,
Well, and I know that the indoor season is going on right now. When does the season start down here? Is it January that it really kicks off?
Yeah. I mean, like, there's some bigger classes, though, around the holidays. I think they might even have a World Cup qualifier down there. So, like, some of the big barns are actually already down there and gearing up to start showing. So it's... I mean, it's kind of seamless for like these top horses. I mean, they really can just keep going. You need to be thoughtful about when you rest them, because it's not, you know, like there's not a huge gap in the show calendar, honestly.
And I know Ocala is really coming up. You know, it used to be everybody headed to Wellington, but there's more money in here in Ocala than there ever has been. Is it tough now to decide which do you go to Ocala or do you go to Wellington?
Yeah, for sure. I think you're seeing people bounce around a lot. There's a lot of back and forth going, seeming more and more every year, really. I don't remember that so much when I was younger, but it's the prize money. You know, people are traveling.
You know, it's kind of annoying, too, because it's just far enough apart. It's like 3.5-4 hours with a trailer, probably. It's just far enough that it's a pain.
It's an overnight trip.
Yeah, you can't do it in a day. You know, it's just an hour and a half too long for a day trip. If it was about 2 hours, it'd be great.
It's so true. So people have to like split up their business and take some and leave some. It's interesting, but we got that million down there at the end of season, so we will be up there watching.
Well, we have Jennifer Blumenthal joining us. You can join in this conversation right now from barnmanager.com. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
We were just talking about how everybody has to bounce around now, that even Florida's divided in half now for the jumpers.
I know. But it's good. It's good. I like that there's places that everybody can go that fits everyone's needs. I used to show in Gulfport, Mississippi for a long time, and I really enjoyed it my time there. And now I go to Florida, to Wellington, and, you know, I have a good friend who's going to go to Ocala for the winter, but she's going to bring her horse down to Florida to West for certain classes and go back up and kind of go between the two. And, you know, I know there's plenty of riders in Wellington who do that as well. Yeah, for Live Oak, for instance, is a great show they come up for.
You know, there is no more boring a road than the road that from when you get below Orlando heading down toward Miami. That is the most boring road. You're making that trip a bunch of times. Well, what's going on in the world of jumping there, Jennifer?
So we just wrapped up indoors, which is, you know, pretty big deal. I never rode as a junior or in the equitation, so it's all kind of new to me, but I love watching it. And it's been really actually an exciting year. A major theme has been the boys dominating the equitation scene. It really all started at USET finals in Gladstone, New Jersey, with Jeffrey Hesslink winning. That was very exciting. Team Heritage, woo. And then we go to Harrisburg with Spencer Smith. His parents are trainers, and he won. And he was the first male rider in the past 12 years to win the medal.
Wow.
I thought that I didn't realize that. I was looking up some, you know, past results. The past 5-year winners have been Lily Keenan, Meg O'Mara, Schaefer Raposa, Haley Barnhill, and Jessica Springsteen. And then I was like, okay, well, who else has won? And I went back a little farther and, you know, some major wins. People who have accolades of awards under their belts are Kent Farrington, Mark Leone, Buddy Brown, Conrad Homefield, Bernie Charig, George Morris, and Ronnie Mutch. It was really nice to see a boy's name as the winner. I watched Spencer's rounds, and it was consistent, there was flow, there was connectivity. Like, it was really beautiful. I was really happy to see him ride. And I saw him at some of the indoor shows. He, you know, he was a humble winner, like very, he was very gracious to anyone who, I'm stumbling on my words this morning. He was a very gracious winner. It was very nice to see his win. Did anybody watch any of the live feeds?
I watched, I was actually there at Washington, and I watched Michael Hughes win, and you're right, I didn't pick up on it at the time, but that is very different to have all boy riders out there, which I don't think there are that many, right? Aren't there, you know, in that sort of top tier, maybe like 6 or 7 or something?
Yeah, it was just a handful. Actually, at Washington, it was great because the TJ O'Mara won the hunter phase, and then Michael Hughes won the jumper phase, and then he won overall. And TJ O'Meara is the brother to Meg O'Meara, who won the medal 2 years ago. So I thought that was really nice.
It's really interesting. It's cool because, you know, the hunters are the hunters. It's sort of a confirmation style class on the horse. And then the equitation, it gets clumped in with the hunters a lot because, you know, it's similar jumps and the same rings and all this business. But really the equitation was intended to groom tomorrow's jumper riders.
That was a major theme of the courses, this indoor season. I did a little background research. I wanted to be prepared. And the USET at Gladstones, the United States Equestrian Team, their format is they do a flat phase, a gymnastic phase, and then a show jumping round, basically. And then they have to switch horses for the work-off. And it's outside. It's at Gladstone. And it's supposed to be, I guess, based after the World Equestrian Games. And it's very, very jumper-based. So there's a high emphasis on, mm-hmm. you know, grooming tomorrow's
against the
riders.
Clock as well. The fox factor and the clock, time allowed, all that stuff. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great division.
And the same thing for the McClay. There's a great, great article. There's several great articles about McClain's perspective on the course, how he built it, what he wanted to see, what he wanted the riders to do, because traditionally there's been an emphasis on everybody has to do the same number of strides. There's no room for error. You can't change anything. You can't be, you know,
like a hunter
leave one out. Yeah, I can't, exactly. You can't leave one out. You can't add one based on your ride or your horse. But for this year, the judges came out actually after Washington and before the McClay to say we're looking for and we're accepting, you know, variations. It doesn't have to be a set number. Because I think in Washington, I believe, Michael Hughes might have done a different number than, you know, the five rounds preceding him. I'm not exactly positive on that.
Sure. They did all kind of do different numbers, and you're right that and right there is the difference really between your equitation style class and a hunter style class, because if you're grooming for top sport jumping, that's what it comes down to. You need to know your horse and you need to make the plan accordingly. Yes, fastest time, double clear, but I mean, check out BZ Madden winning the national the way she did. I mean, she literally left out an entire stride to the last jump. And she knew her horse. She knew that she could call on that freakish scope. She's obviously felt it before, and that was an option. That was a tool in her tool belt, and she used it.
There was a great split screen of BZ up against McClain, and you have the big, large horse a little bit slower, and then McClain's little quick horse going really fast. And you can see you could see early in the video where McClain gains some ground, but then maybe BZ takes over in a corner, and then when she leaves the stride out to the last jump, I mean, I love the split screen. Those are the best because you really get to see the difference. Yeah, it's great. Everybody should watch the split screens.
Yeah, that's a cool thing that they're doing these days because you really can see it, and it's two totally different types, and you have to make up the time in different places on different types of horses. And I think the equitation, yes, it's judged as a style class, but they're factoring that in. You know, it's definitely it grooms you for that way of thinking. Know your horse, and you make your plan accordingly.
And also, all these kids who are competing in indoors, you know, they're going from one show to the other. They're all doing it together. These are the kids that we're going to see on representing the United States at some point. We're going to see on the teams. They're the future show jumping. So if they're, you know, these are the tests that we're giving to weed out the best of the best, then they should be relevant to what they're going to be doing, you know, internationally. It shouldn't, you know, you have to ride the course that's going to fit your horse the best, that your horse is going to excel at. Because that's how you're going to be a winner. You can't ride, you know, if you have a smaller horse with a smaller stride or a larger horse with a bigger stride. It just depends. It really depends on what animal you're sitting on top of and where your horse is going to excel. Like, are they quick in the corners? You know, can they just gallop up and gain ground? It just really depends on your mount.
Now, let's talk a little bit of National. Of course, the National Horse Show just finished up, and you were talking about the McClay, and Tori Colvin won the McClay. She's out of Florida. Do either of you know her?
I've been watching her for a long time. I remember when she was at the ponies. She is deadly accurate. Like, her horses love her. Horses jump so well for her. She has excelled so much in the hunters, and, you know, she's doing very well in the junior jumpers. I think she was an Artisan Farm winner, and, you know, obviously the USHJ Hunter Derby Finals winner. And equitation, she's just started riding. I believe, Emily, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe she's riding with the Heritage now. Yes, she is. She's riding with Heritage now. She's no longer with Scott Stewart. And, you know, I think she's focusing on making her position stronger, really nailing the equitation element.
How old
is
she?
Of course, I think I read that yesterday.
She's still got a year left, right?
I
think she's 17.
Or 18, something like that. Yeah.
She's won a bunch. She won the big Derby in Wellington, didn't she, last circuit? I mean, she's on it. I don't know her personally, but I've watched her ride quite a bit just over the last few years, not when she was really young. But, yeah, she is deadly accurate.
Second-place winner, Hunter Holloway. How could you – is it any more perfect that you have a girl named Hunter doing – Hunter classes. I mean, it's just
I know.
I've known Hunter for a long time, too. I've watched her since she was this little kid plopped on top of these horses. She's been riding since she was just a little pea in the pod. She had some
professional daughter, right?
Yes. Her mom is Brandy Howler. They're from Kansas. Hunter had a really strong lead coming out of the first or second round, I believe. But, you know, at the end of the day, she added a stride. She was deep a little bit coming into, I think it was a double, and then she added a stride to the last line. And, you know, it was very clear, like, her horse, she was a little bit on the outside track, and then you watch the other video of Tori, and she's on the, you know, she's right on it. And it was just that little bit of striding that made the difference that determined the winner. But I thought Tori's round was her position was so strong. She was so confident. She was so accurate. Like, you had to give it to her.
That's
and
great.
We're going to see Hunter come back. Hunter's very young. I think she's like maybe 14, maybe 15.
Wow.
She's had a great year. This has been her first year really stepping up. She's been doing like the big jumpers for a long time at an early age, but this is, I actually spoke with her father because we set up a really big booth at Washington, barnmanager.com did. And so we had so many people coming in and out and in and out. All the trainers kept coming and sitting down between breaks because you have a lot of downtime at indoors. Indoors is very stressful. You have to get up. There's long hours. You're prepping the horses at, you know, in like the wee hours of the morning, like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. So we had a lot of people come by and we got like a little bit of the inside scoop. Hunter's father, stepfather, came by and talked with us for a while about her. And, you know, we're going to see Hunter this year and going, I think, down to Wellington. I think they've gone to Ocala a lot before. And she'll be back. And I actually wanted to mention, wasn't Michaela Langmeyer a past guest on the show, Emily?
She was, yes. She's adorable.
She was a rock star all of finals.
Yeah.
I mean,
she really rides great. Those kids, you guys have to get on, everybody who's listening, you need to get on YouTube and Google some of these names and see some of these rounds from the live stream. These kids, they ride well, they work hard. I mean, they're doing it every weekend, day in, day out. It's really cool to watch the style and it's effective. You know, that's what we're going for. So they are fun to watch. But Michaela Langmeyer, I mean, she's, how old is she, 15, 14?
14, 15, she really was very, very solid, very consistent, and she'll be back too. Hunter and Michaela, they'll be back.
Love
I'm
it.
Really glad for, you know, Michael and Tori to have such great success this indoor circuit. And, you know, they're going to be aging out and, I'm assuming, joining the professional ranks.
Yeah, It's always so I have
to follow up the question on Hunter. Their parents are professionals. Did they name her Hunter hoping she would become a hunter?
I don't know.
And then, you know, if she had gone into eventing, would they have been really disappointed? You know,
or dressage.
Or
become,
or barrel racing.
Barrel racing, frowned upon.
Exactly.
I do know that something interesting. There are some little interesting tidbits that I picked up that apparently the Pennsylvania National Horse Show is going to be losing their World Cup status.
Hmm.
Yeah, so
don't
that's,
like
a
that.
Bit of, that's a little bit of a disappointment. And, you know, I have to say that I was a little, another disappointment I had, not to be too critical of all the horse shows, if anyone's listening out there. The National Horse Show, I would have liked to have seen that they, you know, in Kentucky, I wish they had drawn bigger crowds. I mean, they're in horse country.
I was going to ask you that, because I was watching the feed, and it just didn't look full. I mean, it just didn't.
I was so I didn't go to Kentucky, but I was in Washington, like I said, with barn manager, and I was so impressed with Washington. There was so many spectators, and we on barn night, the energy from all the kids from I mean, there was just, you know, groups of 15 kids in like brightly colored T-shirts with posters representing their barns, because the barn with the most spirit. I think they win a prize of having a free clinic with a top trainer of whoever is selected for that year. I'm not sure. I tried to find out who it was this year, but I seem to keep missing that fact or point. And the spirit at Washington was great there. I kept talking to people and be like, oh, I came from Virginia. I came from Maryland. I came from Delaware. You know, some of the major cities, Baltimore, wherever they were in the area, they came. And, you know, being in right there in Washington, the energy, like that metropolis feel, like you haven't had that since being at the Garden. It was really, really, really nice to see a horse show like that. It was very, very exhibitor, or not exhibitor, spectator friendly. And the ring was always filled with people watching, especially at nighttime with the costume class, the puissance, and even the, you know, the Washington, even the final for the medal at Washington, because they do it right before the Grand Prix, you have all these people coming in and filling the seats for the Grand Prix, but all the kids competing in the equitation, that's a lot more pressure because it's a full stadium at night under the lights. That was, you know, really perfect situation to prep kids for championship riding.
I think, you know, not to belabor this, but, you know, I'm a big fan. Everybody knows I'm a big fan of the Kentucky Horse Park and have been for years. But we, you know, we all, I'll say this for you guys. All of us kind of thought it was a mistake to take it out of New York and bring it down there. It does not have the number of people that it takes that are interested in these types of classes locally to fill the stadium. So what you got to do is bring people in. They got to be willing to make a weekend of it, spend the money, come down and do that. And I just don't think they're seeing that kind of support yet. You put a rodeo in there in a weekend and the locals come out, because that's the kind of, once you get out of Lexington proper, it's all Western. You know, it's a Western area. It's rural Kentucky. So you get out of that. They're not coming in to watch a jumping show. They're coming in to watch a rodeo. They come in for Road to the Horse, packs the place. So, you know, I kind of wonder if that wasn't a mistake, but that's me saying that, not you guys. So you don't even have to answer.
Yeah. But yeah, no, totally. I mean, when you even watch the live stream, you're just like, okay, like this is the National Horse Show. And like, I was there at Washington, you know, and you were like, whoa, like, I mean, it really was packed, like Jennifer's saying, and then you've got the energy and the buzz, and like, you know, we're riding top sport and we're also grooming our young riders for top sport. So you want that sort of like excitement. I mean, that's how it was at the National, when it was at Madison Square Garden. I think my last year was the last year that it was there. But it, I mean, you had people that just like, you know, same as like Washington, they buy tickets because it's like the event in town, like the circus or anything else that's going on.
Speaking of the circus, actually, I hope that they move it. So there was always rumors that they were going to move it to the Barclay Center from, you know, now that the Barclay Center is built.
Where's that?
And the
Where's that?
In Brooklyn.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Brooklyn, New York. Come on. Jay-Z's hometown. He loves about it all the time. The Barclay Center is amazing. It is beautiful. I went there for a Rolling Stones concert once. But there was rumors that they were going to, you know, they were trying to, you know, do an L.A. or, you know, how they had the L.A. Masters do a New York Masters there. That never happened. Now it's, you know, obviously in L.A. And the Barclays Center, I guess, somebody just told me there is, they built it so that there is room to house, like, the circus came, for instance. So we just have to figure out how to get in there. I know there's a committee working on it, and I think there's, you know, some, you know, financial, maybe logistical issues, but I hope to see that a horse show comes to Brooklyn and maybe let's bring them a play and the National back there.
That would be awesome.
They cannot be happy with the numbers and the dollars that they would have taken in from the crowds at this National Horse Show. They cannot be happy with that.
Sure. So there was no
crowd. I was looking into Harrisburg a little bit, and to date, the economic impact for Harrisburg, for instance, is $36 million to the community. And also $1.5 million has gone back into the youth of Central Pennsylvania. You know, I think that at the end of the day, you know, I think bringing the National Horse Show to Kentucky, I don't know what the economic impact is because the horse park is already so relevant, like you said. You know, they have events
I think
in there all the time.
That's it. You hit the nail on the head. We lived there for, four years, and we lived about 4 miles from the horse park. Well, what happened was we would go over for certain things, but because there was something there all the time, you could not go over for everything.
Right.
So you just, you know, there's always something there. So, we would go over for the things that really struck our fancy, or if we were bored one night, we'd go over. But otherwise, it wasn't something you really planned. And the thing about the National Horse Show is it's not been an event for average people. It was always a society event. And you're not getting your society, quote-unquote, society people coming out of New York, flying to Kentucky to spend the weekend in Kentucky. They're just not doing it like they thought
they would.
It's
not going to happen.
Right. And am I wrong about that? It was always a society event.
Totally. And that was a huge element of that horse show and a lot of the finals. And you still get that feel like at the Verizon Center in downtown D.C. I posted some of those photos on our jumping radio page. I mean, the horses are like in the parking garage, like they're, you know, walking down the sidewalk for exercise. It's cool. You know, the ponies can jump in the city and they should. It's fun. It's good for spectators.
Washington is hard, too. That it's kind of like the garden. That ring was small coming out of the corners. I was watching the junior amateur jumpers. And, I mean, and the Grand Prix. The Grand Prix was a good, hard course. And that was a great class to watch. You know, some Grand Prix get a little, they're not so interesting. But Washington's class, the other, when I was there,
that was
a great class. And the Fleasance, I loved that. Like, it was, right now, Washington's my favorite horse show for indoors. Hands down, obsessed, love it. I would go back every year just as a spectator. It was that well put on. They deserve.
I agree.
There should be an award for indoors so that they each
horse
show organization
other ones
raises the board. Yeah.
It's so true. That's a great idea. I like that. Like barn night instead of barn night, we'll have finals night. We'll
and
judge
it really
all the finals.
Should be.
No, for
it's
sure. Well, I love it. Well, thanks for calling in, Jen, with all the feel from the finals. I mean, it's such an exciting time of year, and you guys tune in to live streams or Google these kids, these McClay and Washington winners. It's really, really inspirational to see how hard they've worked and how well they ride. So, and Jennifer will be back
song.
With us next episode. Yeah.
Boys are back in town.
All right. Bye. I know, it really is great. All right. Thanks, Jen. We'll talk to you soon.
BarnManager.com. Check it out today. Well, we have our product pick of the month. Tell us about that coming up.
Woo. Yep. We got Lou Ann Smith, who's calling in from the EquestrianCorner.com. She is a horse girl, and she tries every episode. She has been behind the scenes trying a product for us, and she is going to give us her horse girl review. So here she is, Lou Ann Smith.
All right, we have Lou Ann Smith is back with us from theEquestrianCorner.com with our new product pick for the week. What do you have for us, Lou Ann? Welcome.
Hi, Emily. Thanks for having me. This week we have the Pro Fleece Crossover Breech from Carrots. and they're awesome. I love the style. They're very they're not like your typical breeds. They're styled very nicely. They're very flattering. I got the full seat ones to try.
Oh, yeah.
And it has the perforated nubuck, and I'm telling you, they're very grippy. They're very grippy.
Are they?
So I really like them, yeah. And,
yeah, they're very flattering, the look of them. Like, how do they feel? What is
they
the
are.
With, feel?
Yeah, with the V in the front, you know, across the belly, it kind of almost like holds you in a little bit too, you know, and it has a little bit wider of a waistband. You know, that's always good when you're wearing breeches, have something hold you in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're very, they're comfortable. They're extremely warm because they are fleece lined. But to look at them, like, you would never tell that they are, you know what I mean? Like, they just look like your normal breech.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't look big and bulky.
Right?
Yes, they do. They have tan, midnight, shale, and black. And they're very nice. In fact, I was just at the state horse show, and I saw a girl wearing them. And I was like, oh, my gosh, they look so great. I couldn't wait to get mine.
Now, Louanne, I have a question for you. A lot of times with the fleece, you know, everything sticks to it. It's fleece lined. The outer shell is not fleece, right?
The outer shell is not fleece.
Okay.
The outer shell, I mean, if you would see them, you would never know that they were fleece because they just look like your normal breech. But on the inside, they're fleece lined, except for, like, from the knee down where your tall boots would go, it is like a thinner fabric. So it's real easy. You don't have that bulk going under your tall boots. Real easy to zip them on. You don't have that extra bulk, but... I was very impressed. I really liked them a lot.
Yeah, because about 10 years ago, if you remember right, the fleece breeches all came out, and they lasted, they were all fleece, remember? And they only lasted about 2 years till people discovered once you got hay in them, they were just covered in hay.
You couldn't get it
out. Exactly.
Right.
Oh gosh, yeah,
right.
Cool.
Well, another great thing. Yeah, I know, right? Another really great thing about these, they are water resistant. I was in the barn, I had the mine on after I was riding, and I was watering the horses, and of course, you know, spraying the water. And water, yes, exactly. The water just kind of pills up on it instead of, like, you know, soaking in and getting wet.
Wow.
It just kind of, like, pills up. And they're supposed to be stain resistant as well. So, I mean, that's great because you know how dirty being around the horses can be. And you know, you can wash them right up and you know, they doesn't stain. So
They are made by Carrots, which means they're top quality and you're not going to have to worry about that.
Right.
So
and
the S Equestrian brands, they're top quality, not going to fall apart on you.
Right. And they do have a warranty on them too. The Carrots products have a warranty as well.
Nice.
Do they
Very
still
nice.
Come with the little bag of carrot seeds?
You know, they really do pay a lot of attention to detail. The line, I don't have a lot of pieces. I have like a shirt or something else along the way that I've tried, but it's very durable and really a lot of technical properties, like you're saying, with the stain resistance and the finish that makes it not, you know, the shavings and everything not stick to it. They're quite impressive with the cut and the technology.
Absolutely. And you know, it's very stylish, their products. You know, their whole fall line is, I mean, I love it. I want everything in the fall line.
That's awesome. That's cool. You want that. You know, you want it to be, the whole line.
Well, you can find
Absolutely.
It at the Equestrian Corner. It's theequestriancorner.com. And I was just looking at the price of these. You have it at $122 for the full seat. And it would make, you know, we're only 6-7 weeks away from Christmas now, so... would make a good holiday gift, and you know, nothing better than a Carrots product. You get a rider, any Carrots product, and you're safe. I'm just telling that for the horse husbands out there. Carrots is approved.
It is.
And I'm just looking too, competition wise, you've got the major competition beat on price by about $10 or $12. So
yeah, we try to do, you know, as best we can with the pricing. So I'm glad we were able to come out a little bit on the price. And it's a good product. I really like them.
That's the equestriancorner.com. Just search for the Ladies Carrot Pro Fleece Crossover Full Seat Breech, and we'll also put that in the show notes so that people can find it. Just go to horsesinthemorning.com for today's show, and you'll find a link directly to it. Thank you, Luann. We appreciate you stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me.
The fleece, carrots, britches, check them out. This is that time of year. So, okay, we're jam-packed. We're moving on. We have a fun guest up next. We have Sue Vanderlinden, who I actually met at Washington Finals. She is a sponsor, and she does everything. She is a mother, she is a rider, and she has a blog on Horse Junkies United. Sue, are you there?
I am.
Yay, thanks for joining us. Great to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate being on.
So this is fun. So like I said, we don't have a ton of time, but I thought this was going to be great to have you on to share just a little bit about who you are and what got you started with this blog and where people can find it. What's it about?
Horse Junkies United, and the site is just that, horsejunkiesunited.com, was originally started and still is a place for all things equestrian for young adult and adult amateurs, we're people who are in it for the love of the horses and the love of the sport and the love of the competition. And, you know, people like Katie Dynan and McLean Ward don't have to worry. Their jobs are safe. We will not be competition for them. We just like doing the same thing they do. So that's really, we look to the blogs to kind of share our experiences so that other AMIs know that they're not alone in what they're dealing with, help them get some of their questions answered, be resources for each other, and really just be a great community for each other.
Yeah, I love that. I did kind of check it out online. I had heard it, but the name, but I wasn't really familiar with it, so that's cool. It's kind of like by amateurs for amateurs.
Exactly.
So these are a lot of, you know, like similar, like I saw some things on horse purchasing or navigating, you know, pre-purchases and finding a trainer, like all different kinds of stuff. So you are a horse girl. You're a mother also of another horse girl.
Right? I am. Keeping the craziness going.
Yes, second generation. Perfect. And you guys, I think, recently got a new horse, didn't you? New addition to the family?
We did. It's funny. I've been riding since I was 9 on a bribe from my father. And it only took me 40 years to come up with my first horse, but here he is.
Oh,
but,
so
he's,
cool.
Yeah, he's a 15-year-old former fox hunter that we're looking to do some low-level eventing with. And he's just a real sweet, good-natured boy that tries his hardest for anything you ask him to do. And particularly for me, you know, trusting this 1,200-pound horse with my child, you know, he's got to be pretty pretty level-headed and pretty trustworthy because I am handing him my kid.
Totally, yeah. Well, you know, my mom rides with me, too. I have
yes.
sort of the same situation. You're like, now look, buddy.
Yeah.
You better get it right. You mind your manners.
Yeah.
So you guys, you're doing a little showing I saw on the blog. And is that sort of, is your blog sort of geared towards that? You're traveling with Charlie Brown is the name of the pony.
Yep. Charlie Brown is the horse. And you'll hear him go by a variety of names, anything from Chuck to Charlie to CB. So,
That's
but
awesome.
the blog is kind of chronicling our adventures with Charlie. So if you go to the blog, you'll see, you know, the adventure of realizing we actually needed to buy a horse, that the school horse thing just wasn't working for us on a longer-term basis. I mean, my daughter's 11, and there are restrictions with being able to take a horse off property from this barn for liability reasons to go to a show. So the only way you could take a horse to a show was if it was privately owned. Okay. You just told me what I need to do. So
yep.
We went through the realization of we need to buy a horse. We went through the year-long process of trying to find a horse, of actually getting the purchase executed, which we had some challenges with, and then, you know, bringing him into a new barn and feeling, in a way, kind of like a new mom again. You know, I get
yeah.
there with the horse, and my husband says to me at one point, he says, I know we're going to be here all day, but what are we looking for? And I said, well, it's kind of like the baby, you know, you need to make sure they roll, they eat, they drink, everything works.
That's hilarious.
And then we can go home. So, you know.
Oh, man.
But
that's awesome.
I've been,
so, I mean,
that,
you're out
I've
there.
Been that horse husband before. I know exactly where he
is. The crazy, well, when you understand.
Yeah, we've tried to make this fun for him, too, though, because we've appointed him the official tow vehicle and trailer guy. So he gets, you know, involved with keeping our jumps up to snuff and, you know, trimming them and painting them and keeping them in good shape. So it involves power tools and machines and mechanical things. He's good.
There you go. You should definitely teach courses on that, how to get the horse husband to enjoy being a part of the crazy.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a blog about that right now, about picking out the trailer. So it's coming.
You got it. So tell us, so this is the blog, this is the kind of stuff that you can read up on, which I love it. It's great info, and it's, you know, up-to-date stuff. I mean, I saw you were at a clinic with George Morris and some other things. So tell people again, how can they find you?
It's horsejunkiesunited.com, and there are over 36 different bloggers from different disciplines within the equestrian world. So if you're looking for eventing stuff, it's there. If you're looking for dressage stuff, it's there. You can choose to follow a particular blogger. So if you just stick my name in the search window, Sue Vanderlinden, all of my blogs will come up, and you can decide to subscribe to me or anybody else that writes. And, you know, we'll just keep you apprised.
Perfect.
On the adventures of life with Charlie Brown.
I love it. It is interesting. It's cool. I did read a little bit of it. So you guys check it out. Sue Vanderlinden, and keep up with old Charlie Brown, see what's happening in the D.C. area. So thanks, Sue, for checking in with us. We'll hopefully see you soon.
Hopefully. Thanks.
Good luck. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Next up, we have our trainer tip. Or no, we're going to be talking conditioning and nutrition next. You got so many things packed in here today.
I know.
To
I really
out.
Booked us. I booked us tight, huh? Wow.
Well, let me just remind everybody, we are Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek, and I am here with Emily today. Emily Thompson is with us, and of course, it is our once-a-month jumping episode, the first Tuesday of every month, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair. We are brought to you today by S Equestrian. All right.
Yeah. Cool. All right, so we are ready. I think we have our next guest. We are so fortunate to have none other than Kevin Babington, international Olympic rider, rides for Ireland, also an equestrian rider. He is here. This is sort of the show of people that do everything, and so Kevin is another one of those people. He is incredibly successful out on the show jumping circuit. He also has a feed company, Babington Mills. So we are going to hear about it and all the fun stuff that they've been doing. Kevin, are you there? Are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Emily and Glenn. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Can I start?
Yay,
can I ask
you
a quick question? Is this are you the only jumper that owns a feed mill?
Well, that I'm aware of in the U.S. I'm not sure. I know the Whitaker brothers in England are involved in a feed company also.
Huh.
Okay. Well, it is interesting. So now, Kevin, you have been, how long would you say you've been doing the feed company?
The Babington Mills has been up and running for about 3 years. We actually started, believe it or not, as a bedding company, a chop straw bedding. The reason I got involved in that is I'm based in Pennsylvania. We use straw because of the mushroom farmers. For, you know, manure removal. And straw can be difficult to work with. You know, every load is a little different. Sometimes it's dusty. The staff hates working with conventional straw. So I was in Germany.
Hear, hear.
Totally.
I was in Germany and I saw a product that was really interesting. It was a chop straw, and I realized it had no dust in it. So I got adventurous. I had purchased a hay farm, so I brought the machinery over from Europe and I started a chop straw bedding business, and that's how I kind of got started.
I didn't realize that because I saw
you know, Eric and I have tried the feed. It's amazing. I just thought that there was one feed, though. But then getting on your website, I mean, you've got like six different kinds of feed for different levels of competition and sport. And then, yeah, the betting, I didn't realize you started with that. It does look really nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's nice. It's easy to work with. It's a little bit like working with, like, shavings, even maybe easier. It's a little finer than shavings, but and it has more absorption because of the process. We run it through a hammer mill and through a chopper, so it opens up the node of the straw, and which allows for more soakage. So it works a little bit like a kitty litter, and so there's a lot
right.
less waste, and the staff loves working with it.
So does it come in bags or bales, or
it
how
does
it come?
Just like we have our baling machine is a shavings baler machine, so it's exactly the same dimensions as a shavings bag.
Huh.
Wow.
I never heard of it.
That's
and
really
people
cool.
People love it because there's no dust. That's one of the main benefits, and there's a lot less waste. So. Straw, it would drive me crazy when I would walk through my barn every morning and see the amount of good straw being wasted. So,
That's because you had people like me cleaning it. Because
it's very hard to do straw. And that's a little bit, that's how I started. And I've always been very interested in the best nutrition for my horses, and what I had been doing is I was using, you know, a lot of different feed companies, and I was never really satisfied. I just found there was a lot of molasses in the feed, there was a lot of inconsistency in the feed, and I just felt like I wasn't getting the best feed for my horses. So I had been mixing organic grains with a Denji product, and what I realized after a short time is I had the machines to make my own chopped hay, make my own Denji product. So when I started to do some research on the best way of doing it, I found a company in England, and I ended up hiring the nutritionalist over there as a consultant. And he came to the States and he said, you guys have better hay in the U.S. than we have in England. You can make a better product than we can. So we started to develop our own line of feed, and that Robert Fowler ended up coming to work for me, and he runs the mill for me now. He runs Babington Mills, so it sort of all fell into place, and that's how I got started in the feed business. It was purely by accident.
Well, and knowing what you needed and what you wanted different, because you come to it, you know, with practical knowledge of what these horses require for top sport, which is, I think, pretty unique. Now, tell me, what about your, I see you have a feed for the breeding horses, for young horses?
Yes, that's a new feed we actually just started, and, you know, the main thing, horses are evolved to have a high fiber diet. They're not evolved to be eating buckets of grain. But what's lacking in your everyday hay, they don't have the sufficient amount of vitamins and minerals and the probiotics and prebiotics that they need. So what we do is we basically use a high quality hay. We chop it. We add soy oil as our fats. And we use Alltech as our vitamin and mineral supplier. And I'm sure a lot of people know the name Alltech from the World Championships in Kentucky a few years ago. But they're by far the best vitamin mineral supplier probably in the world for horses and for all animals. And so we sort of partnered up with them as our supplier. And we basically... It's to promote growth and muscle development, and without so much sugar and starch, you're less likely to have issues for, you know, a lot of young horses have unnatural growth spurts, and it causes a lot of problems down the road. And we've had great success with this. You know, they put on enough weight, and they have everything they need in the feed without feeding them way too much grain, and that's what
wow.
you know, that's what causes a lot of issues down the road.
Yeah, I guess that really does strike you about the grain when you look at it compared to another pelleted feed, you know, depending on what people are feeding, but yours has sort of like a benji and a hay, you know, chopped up in it, so it looks much more well balanced.
Yeah, and for the younger horses in particular, they need very little grain. You know, but they do need, they can't really survive on just a diet of hay, because they're lacking the vitamin and minerals they need. So it's basically a balancer with a high quality chopped hay, and then the oils are added in for fat content. So it's and you know, it's, we sort of build on the other line of feeds from there. You know, obviously like a show jumper, an event horse or a racehorse needs a little more energy, so we add some grains into that to give them the necessary energy they need. But everything is controlled with the starch and the sugars to keep them low, just so that it's a slow release energy rather than a quick release energy. You know, and we've had huge success in the hunter world, because everybody likes a nice round fat hunter, but they don't want to be lunging them for 2 hours. So what we found is they have sufficient energy to do their job, but not quick, hot energy to make them flighty. And I think that's sort of what we're all looking for, you know. And Robert Fowler has, you know, years of research, he's a horse. He was an event rider. He's a horse person. He knows what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. He's not just a nutritionalist. He's a horseman first and nutritionalist second. You know,
that's awesome, which is so important. I mean, to know sort of what the destination is.
Yeah.
What do you feed your horses?
Most of my, you know, I have all jumpers. I have no hunters in my barn. So most of my horses are on performance, which was really developed for the jumpers. I have a few hotter jumpers. Like one of my Grand Prix horses is a little bit of a hot horse. So she's on the hunter feed. And she has all the energy she needs, but it just keeps her a little bit quieter. You know, what we found... What I found with that horse, for instance, is before, I've had her for about maybe 6 years now, and before we started on this forage-based feed, you know, they'd kick the barn down in the morning for their feed, and
yeah.
they'd gulp it down in 2 minutes. You know, with the beauty of the forage feed is they eat it much, much slower, and they finish their feed, but they're not kicking the barn down for it. And I think it's the... You know, there's so much molasses and sugar in feed that it's like kids looking for candy, you know. So when you take that out of their diet, it changes them. It really does in a positive way.
That's awesome. Sugar is just, it's not good for them at all.
No. And that's what the most feedback we have when a customer starts on the feed is the change in the horse's personality to work around, you know. And
wow.
You know, and I think even for me, when you first look at the feed, you wonder, okay, I have a Grand Prix horse jumping at the highest level, jumping meter 60. Am I getting all the energy and nutrition out of this feed that I need? But I've had probably the best year jumping this year than I've ever had, and my horses are not on any additional supplements or anything. They're just on the feed.
Really? That's awesome. Yeah, you should definitely, you guys, Google this mare that Kevin has, Shorapur. I know it's on YouTube. You can see the video of her at least jumping at Harrisburg. She is unbelievable. Is she the one that you have on the hunter feed?
She is also on the hunter feed. She's also a little bit on the hot side, and she's a blood horse, like unbelievable blood. And yeah, she's 9 years old. She won 4 Grand Prix this year. She won the Hampton Classic. She won the Fidelity Classic. She won a Grand Prix in Culpeper, and she won a Grand Prix at Hits. And
wow, poster child, Babington Mills.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Well, you guys check out the website, babingtonmills.com. It's a great website. They've got all the info on the feeds there, all the ingredients. You can see there's like six different feeds, so you can pick one that suits you. How do people get the feed?
Basically, there's a contact number on the website, and with Babington Mills, there's one, it's B-A-B-I-N-G-T-O-N. A lot of people put double B, but it's just B-A-B-I-N-G-T-O-N, Babington Mills, and there's a contact number on there.
Sweet.
And we're expanding. Like right now, we distribute it. We have a very good distributor in Danbury, Connecticut, who sort of takes care of that whole area. We have Stolfus in Pennsylvania. We service New Jersey, parts of New York, and we're also selling our feed in Wellington. And
that was my next question.
We're looking to expand.
Get me some.
We have a distributor in Ohio, and we're just gradually. We're trying not to get ahead of ourselves. So we're, but the feedback
targeted
is just
growth.
Incredible.
That's awesome. Well, it is really amazing stuff. So you guys check it out. And Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and we'll see you in Florida.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you soon.
And that is babingtonmills.com. All right.
Cool.
Well, we're keeping you hopping today. Actually, you're keeping yourself hopping today, Emily. As we always do on the Jumping Show every month, is we do have a training tip. So tell us who is providing that today.
Okay, we have one of my faves, John Manning, is here with our training tip. He is a course designer and trainer. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thanks for joining us, taking the time. I know you're really busy. I've been on your Facebook. I see you are in California. Is that right?
I just got back.
Cool. Were you judging or building, or what was going on with all those amazing jumps?
Well, there were two weeks at Del Mar. There was a welcome week and the World Cup International week. And they had the Grand Prix Hunter Derby series. The final was the second week.
Very cool. Those are some neat jumps. I liked it. I also want to say I like your style. I don't know if there's a lot of adult men that would build an album on Facebook entitled Horse Show Dogs I Love. That was my favorite. That made my week. I was like, yes, John, I like your style. Awesome. Anyways, okay, so we are jam-packed. So no doubt you have an amazing training tip for us. So what do you have?
Well, I have the design of a gymnastic that I don't see very often, but it's based on the idea of, you know, I think for me, the way I think of it is a horse has two groups of muscles, thrusting muscles and lifting muscles. The lifting muscles are the harder ones to develop. I think lateral work is the basis for most of the development, but there is a jumping exercise that I think strikes right at the heart of developing those muscles and allows you to watch the horse and practice. You know, that's what gymnastics are. And what it is a series of bounces. And one of the reasons you probably don't see it very often is because it requires a fair amount of standards and rails, but I believe it's worth it to set it up once in a while. I start with cross rails and I'll put three bounces in a row. I think for people that aren't that familiar with gymnastics, there are probably three measurements that you ought to keep in mind. The first one is the length of a bounce, which could be between 8 and 12 feet. The second one is the length of a one stride, which could be 18 to 24 feet. And the third one would be the length of a two stride, which I believe would be 30 to 35 feet. So if you can remember those distances, you'd start out with a cross rail to maybe a small vertical at 8 feet. The second element would be another bound stride, which I'd make to 9 feet, but I'd make it an oxer. So in the beginning, you make it a cross rail oxer. Then you go to another bounce, which would be, you know, add another foot, say 10 feet, to your second oxer. And so there you have three bounce drives in a row, two of them being oxers. There are four elements with three bounce drives in between. The next one would be a one stride, and I would make that 19 feet to your third oxer. And then I follow that up with a two stride to a vertical. So what you would see, and the two stride I would start out at around 32 feet. You know, it requires somebody on the ground to watch the horse go to make sure it's comfortable. You're not trying to shorten or lengthen the horse's stride. You're trying to get them to practice rocking back and pushing up. When you use the oxers, they not only have to rock back, but they have to round over the jump. If it's just a vertical, the effort isn't quite as extraordinary. The oxers can start to get widened quite a bit, and it requires you to adjust the entire gymnastic as you do that because the oxers are in the middle of it, and you don't want to change the dimensions between the two elements. So you build it and adjust it as you can, you know, to make the horse feel comfortable. And by the end, the vertical could be, you know, a meter 10, meter 20 even. And what you're trying to teach the horse to do, like I said, is to rock back, push off. And hopefully by the end, you give him those nice two strides, comfortable, and you'll see how well he can handle a tall vertical. And I've had great results with it. And almost any horse can do it that has any experience with gymnastics. And it really gives them that practice. There are four bounces in there, and it really gives them the idea.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And with the oxers to the vertical, that is unique.
Yeah, the oxers, I think, are the key, especially in the bounce part, to, so they're not just rocking back, they're really pushing off and
stretching, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And so would you recommend for, this is, first of all, this is a canter and exercise, is that right?
No, you can trot make it a canter. Yeah, I would trot in just to keep it slow going and comfortable.
Okay.
If you wanted to canter in, then you would probably start with the 12 feet and add a foot as you went.
Okay, so for trotting, then we keep it all at that same dimensions. And so would you recommend maybe starting like with the poles, just where the standards are, just ease them in the first couple times, or start with just cross rails, or how would you break it down into its smallest form?
I guess I would start with the I would start with two cross rails. Just make sure they got the idea of the bounce, because you don't want them to mistake it for trying to stick a stride in there. And then maybe just lay rails on the ground for the third one. And they get the idea pretty quick. And with the repetition of the bounces, you can start to really see in practice, they get the idea, and you're concentrating on that, those muscles that make them not only rock back, but they have to get a little bit quick with their hind feet, and you kind of need that to get that power.
Yeah, totally, because that's, I love bounces. I build them all the time, but that's sort of, that is one thing that you see, you know, okay, you keep doing the bounces. Yeah, they're up and down and up and down, and they're working the stifles and the hocks and everything, but there isn't really that, like, you know, stretching of the rib cage. They're not really going through the whole motion of the stretch of the jump, and maybe even cutting down a little bit at times. They don't have to really push off behind. So that with the oxers, I mean, that really, that will stretch them out, but in a controlled exercise there with its, what did you say, 8 feet for the first one?
8 feet for the first one, and then you just add, and like you're saying, you want to stand there on the side, somebody that has a decent eye for what you're trying to accomplish, and make it comfortable, because you're not trying, like I said, to punish them or, you know, but you brought up a point that I think is important, and that is at the end, you're given that one stride and that two stride. It's almost like a reward, because you don't want to keep everything just the same in a way that makes them bored or thinks, you know, gives them the idea that they're being punished or something.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of open it up. And then, you know, that's kind of what the show ring essentially is the place that we see, okay, has our training and balance work stuck? If you're doing a bunch of courses, a bunch of speed classes, you know, your horses get flat, the distances get longer, the rails start coming down. So the gymnastics are to kind of tighten it all back up, get the balance back on the hocks. But yeah, I mean, you need to also have an opportunity to see, well, is my horse holding his balance? So by having that two stride, you open it back up a little bit, and hopefully your homework at the beginning of that exercise stuck, it looks like.
Right. And like you're saying, I think for a course designer, you know, you have to have elements of both. I've been told sometimes you try to get clever with an equitation course, and it ends up being, I've heard the expression, too boxy, where they're just landing, turning, and there's mm-hmm. never any point where the horse can pause, you know, open his stride up a little bit and show a different side of his talent. So you're trying to mix the two up, I think.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love that exercise. So John is a credentialed course designer, so we are hoping to get him back on a future episode and do a segment on course design. So this is sort of your little tidbit to introduce you to John. He knows what he's talking about, as you can see. Very fun. Thanks for joining us, John.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. This is good stuff you're doing here.
It's great. It's so fun. It makes it all really exciting to have you guys on and bring your expertise and share. I mean, these are great exercises. So I've never even heard of that one. That's a good one. I love it.
All right. Well, thanks
Very
for having
cool.
me, Emily.
Okay. We'll
thanks,
have you back
John.
On another episode. Thanks, John. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, we have, believe it or not, one more interview for you today because Emily has ADD on Tuesdays, and but you know what it is, I think, is because the jumping show is a very popular episode for us, and you're only here once a month, so you have to, like, cram it all in.
I know. We need more episodes. That's what's happening.
Well, tell
us.
That's true. Tell us about our next one.
Okay, so next guest, we have Lynn Reed, a great story, super fun. She is an American breeder who grew up as a show jumping rider competitor herself, and she has successfully bred and developed her own stock in this country, and this year was sort of her first year out there with her breeding horses at indoors, and she cleaned up. Her horses were amazing in the hunter classes. So we have her here, Lynn Reed. Thanks for joining us.
Very, very excited to do this little segment with Lynn. I've been looking forward to it. I've known Lynn for a while, actually, but for those of you that don't know Lynn, most recently, she has had tremendous success at indoors with her homebred horses, which those of you that know me know that I'm passionate about breeding. So that's an exciting topic, really, to cover the homebred breeding situation. But really, all in all, it's just a fantastic story, just start to finish. Lynn, maybe, you know, for people that don't really know you, maybe you could just share with us kind of how you got started. You just sort of your background. You're inspirational. You do everything. You do fox hunting. You do hunters. You're breeding. You're developing. I mean, back it up for us. Tell us, how'd you get started?
We can go all the way back to ponies.
Oh, boy. Do it. Tell us.
My father bought a house with a little barn, and the next thing I knew, we had ponies in our backyard, and my sister and I started riding and competing on the A-show level from the time of 8, and, you know, rode all my junior years, and, rode with Leslie Burr-Lenahan, Anthony D'Ambrosio, Bob Friels. I mean, competed in the medal finals, McClay finals, junior hunters, and then I got out of juniors and went to college and got a real job and started in the amateur owner division and was incredibly successful. And I ended up having to want to retire my amateur horses and trying to figure out how to do that, pay board on them, take care of them, and I ended up going into business, starting my own barn in order to be able to have a place for my horses to be retired to. And in that process, I realized in order to be able to continue to have nice horses, I couldn't go to Europe and buy them. I had to, and I always made up my own horses anyway. I decided that the last horse I was going to buy would be a stallion that I imported, and I'd start my own breeding program so that I can continue to bring nice horses along for myself to ride and to continue my longevity in the sport. So that's kind of a quick synopsis of my background and how I got into the breeding.
Wow, which is, I think, unique to have a real, you know, competitive rider transition into the breeding the way that you have. And Lynn, you're sort of, your eye is on the hunters, right? Would you say that?
You know, the hunters are my first love because it's my natural ride as a rider, even though I did the jumpers. But I will say that I tend to breed almost equal. You know, my jumping, I brought in the jumping lines from Europe and bred back to what I did my research, and I bred my own mares. I brought some good thoroughbred mares off the track that I knew had good jumping lines in them, and from there I developed my breeding program through the thoroughbreds and then my Holsteiner lines. And in that line, I can produce jumpers as quickly as I can produce hunters. So luckily, I can go both ways, and whichever way my horses would like to be is what direction I let them go towards. Luckily, the horse show venues these days, I can start a young horse and then let it play between ticketed warm-ups, little jumper classes, hunter classes, and kind of see which way the horse wants to develop and not try and put a round cog in a square hole.
Yeah, and again, that's, I think, why it's so unique, your story. I love it. I mean, the whole start to finish, and not that it's finished, but just sort of us stepping in now and seeing where you're at, which is awesome. But you have practical knowledge of what is needed out there in the competition ring, what, the hunters sort of, I don't love the hunters, honestly. I hate the medicating. I hate the lunging. You know, I'm a jumper girl. But I know, you're a fox hunter. I mean, like, you know what's up with the hunters. You know what they really need to be. And I think your breeding reflects that. I mean, these are good, suitable horses. You guys check it out online. You can see the YouTube videos of Lynn's homebreds getting, I mean, top ribbons. You got top ribbons at indoors. Like, kudos. It's unbelievable.
Cupid was even called out second in the under saddle, and What About Me was called out twice, third at Washington in the green confirmation, in the handy, and in the state class, I think. But all through Capital Challenge, Harrisburg, Washington, and the National, my horses were constantly in the top. There was a couple horses in the first two horses, it would be virtually impossible to beat on any given day. I mean, they were $1 million horses, and after that were my horses. So I was incredibly pleased with the results. And as you say, with the drugs and the lunging, I have managed to be able to stay away from that, put riders on my horses that don't believe in that also. And my horses are there through hard work and training and a good program, not through shortcuts and, you know, changing the rules and trying to circumvent fair play, if one might call it.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely, and it's so apparent in the polished product. And a little insider information, I did work with Lynn a few years back on this group of horses and was fortunate enough to be the person to back them the first time. And, I mean, the breeding is there. These are good, solid characters, which from what I understand is really genetic typing. So you've done a wonderful job.
It's like you said, it's a bin you know as well as I do. Cupid, he was a homebred that lost his mother at 3 days of age to a twisted colon and had to be bottle fed. And, you know, I'm very involved in my horses from the day they're bred to the day they're on the ground, to standing them up, to nursing them out, to backing them, to I'm always the first one to ride them in the show ring, their first couple of classes, to helping them get developed. And then from there on, picking the appropriate show ring. I mean, I can't do everything, so the one thing I can do is get
You're close.
Best show riders on them, best riders I can. You know, and I've been very, very lucky to have very good people like Todd Menikus and Aaron Vail and Daniel Gaitner, you know, be happy to show my horses and help me along the way in their final, you know, their final steps into the ring. And, you know, as you say, it's not just, I mean, a lot of it is good luck, but a lot of it is just good homework, because it's, you know, I did the same thing with Spellbound, the existing stallion, and
yeah.
Now I have a group coming every year, a group coming on through of well-bred, you know, athletic, good-brained horses.
Yeah, so you guys check out Lynn's website as well. It's tell me your, I don't want to mess it up. What's your website that has that?
www.fox-run-farm.
Okay.
That's got a lot of links to the different horses.
That does, yeah, that's got the links. And then that's got Lynn's stallion that she used,
yep.
Spellbound, right?
Spellbound, yep, yep.
Yeah, and
home
he's
breeding. And
homebred.
He's growing beautiful, beautiful young big horses coming down the line from him. That'll be showing.
Very exciting.
A couple of them showed in the jumpers this year. He's thrown some jumpers.
Oh.
And then I've got a bunch of hunters coming in through, I've got two jumpers and two hunters going to be starting in this year. Down in Florida.
So is this this sort of crop of your horses that did so amazingly well at indoors, is this sort of your first batch that's out there that's of age that's competing?
I would think Spellbound might have been my first.
Okay.
And then after that, I think they're my second. Yeah, I think they're my second group. I put, you know, I did spent a lot of time developing Spellbound and a lot of horses came through and got sold to help me develop him. But
yeah.
After him, this is my next group that I've developed. And now the business seems to be set up and geared to go, you know, straight for that. So now every year I'm going to have horses in the pre-green division or the developing jumper divisions.
Oh, it's so exciting. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so cool. So this is a little bit of a start marker for us tuning in and getting to watch the success and these horses generation to generation. It's so, so cool.
Hey, I got a question, Lynn. So this is the I've been asking you the tough question of the day, and I always wonder this. And you know, when you're doing breeding, is there a number in your head that you know 3 out of 4 horses are going to turn out to be good, or you know, because it like anything else, it's a numbers game, right?
It is a numbers game. I find, you know, I've bred the existing stallion, I've bred my mare, so I'm probably on a third generation to get to the show ring. If you consider, you know, I started with the thoroughbred mares and the Holsteiner stallion that developed the stallion and the brood mares I have, and now I'm on to their prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
I will say it hasn't so much been lack of talent of a horse has gotten in the ring. It's all the little things of, you know, a pasture accident or, you know, just silly things that go on versus the fact that...
Stupid horse stuff, we call it.
Well, exactly.
Totally.
You know, and I haven't even had too much of that happen because, again, I micromanage all of that and I own my own farms. But, I mean, it's...
Yeah, Lynn's very hands-on. It's unique, and that's, again, why I love this story, because she's doing everything with the horses. And I think that's why it reflects so much in your breeding, because, you know, you're interacting with these horses generation to generation and crossing things accordingly.
I still ship them to all the horse shows myself and braid all their tails and get
that's
up
also awesome.
In the morning. And I'm the one riding them and lunging them. So, yeah, I'm very hands-on. When Todd or Aaron or Daniel get on them, I mean, they just jump a couple jumps, God bless them, and go in the ring. If those
that's
horses
awesome.
Are good or bad, it's back on me, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But at least then I know what to adjust and, you know, their personalities from the day they're born, you have to know their personalities. I mean, I live with these horses. I know every little nuance to their behavior pattern. And because I know their mothers and their fathers, I do know certain tendencies that do breed through, and I know how they think. So if there's a problem, I'm pretty quick on my feet to be able to figure out the adjustment. I never quite think a horse is just being bad. I always know they're trying really hard to do their job, just something's not getting through to them, and I'm
not sure what happened there. I think we've lost, we had recorded that earlier, and I think we lost the last part of that, Emily. So I'm not sure what happened.
Oh, it was pretty much winding down anyways, but yeah, I love that story. I love the Made in the USA aspect. I'm passionate about the breeding. I've got my own sort of little breeding operation, fledgling, starting this year. But Lynn, you know, I've been watching her for a while, and it is so impressive, all of the work that she does with these horses and grooming them, riding-wise, developing all of this, all the way up to now that we're watching her actually, like, bring home all these ribbons from indoors. It's got to be a just incredible experience for her to see her little babies that she's foaled out there, you know, in the lineup. I mean, this is the green confirmations in classes like this. It's like an insider's club for sure. But she's doing it. I love it. It was great to have her on.
And it's fox-run-farm.com. That's where you can find all of her information. Well, now, before we wrap up the show here today, and thank you for putting all of these guests together. It certainly made it go by quickly this morning. What's going on with S Equestrian, the sponsor of the show?
Oh, boy. Keeping us busy, as usual. S Equestrian has the shirts, the technical fabric shirts, AeroCool, in a few different styles, men's and women's. We have launched the jacket, which I know you guys have heard me say over and over again, and it does take forever because we're a small company. We are now have two styles of the jacket just for women right now, but we have a sport fit, which is a little more fitted and shorter, and then a classic cut, which is longer and a little looser. It's still feminine, still fitted. You know, it's much more tailored because it's a technical fabric and it's stretchy. It's going to have more of a tailored look than any of your wool hunt coats. But what's really cool, and like this does work, I was not sure if this was going to work or not, but it does, and it has withstood the field testing. But we actually have these like cool little washable sewn in shoulder pads on the classic cut jacket. For those of you that have to have, you know, the old school square look, it really actually does. It's very understated in the fittings and the trimming, so it doesn't, it's not, there's no flash. It is a classic hunter jacket, but out of a technical fabric. So we're really excited about that one. We'll have that hopefully up on the website soon. But, you know, Facebook, we're pretty good about getting up there, and people can shop through Facebook as well. It's S Equestrian. And this other thing that's sort of happening, stay tuned for this spring. We actually have, we're in the middle of a few sort of designer co-branding lines that we're potentially going to, not potentially, we are, we're launching. It feels like potentially because we're in the middle of working it. I'm ripping my hair out. But we actually are going to have a equestrian-inspired mainstream fashion line that will be coming out this spring. So that is going to be for everyday wear, for work wear, office wear, you know, casual gear. So we're very excited. Technical fabrics, and again, that'll be up on Facebook and on the website when it's ready. But we're cruising full steam ahead.
You know, it's going to be nice to see a equestrian brand come out with a mainstream line, because it's been the
right?
non-equestrian brands coming out with equestrian lookalikes that are awful. So
bad. And you see them, like, in the city whenever I go down there, like, to go work in the garment district. I see all these girls rocking the equestrian-inspired gear. And, like, you know, it is in fashion, quote-unquote. Like, people are, like, equestrian is in every fall. So you see these girls that are, like, clearly somebody in the fashion world, and they're wearing these terrible, terrible, like, impersonations of jumping, showing riding clothes. That there's a need for it.
The boots, especially. Some of the boots
are
just awful.
I know. It really is funny, isn't it? Because those of us that know, we're like, you guys look ridiculous.
No rider would ever be caught dead in any of these clothes.
No, but then, like, shouldn't it be possible that a rider should be able to wear, you know, a casual, like, buy into that sort of look? Like, that is a look. It's a fall look, the boots, the jeans, you know, all that business. But there's nothing, like, I could never, ever buy, like, any of those things because they're not authentic, they're not real. So we're hoping to fill the market, have things that you could wear to the barn that have technical properties that are made by, you know, the riders and athletes, but are going to have a mainstream flair as well, so you can wear them out and about.
You know, I think that some of the fashion people have not discovered that the Hitler pants have gone out of fashion a long time ago in riding. There's no more puffy legs, knees. Yeah, they seem to be trying to bring that back, but it's not there
they're
anymore, people.
Yeah, there is not. It's so
well,
true.
Good.
So we're hopeful that we can just break it up a little bit.
Are you going to invite me up when you're doing Fashion Week and you have the runways and all that stuff? You can invite me up so I can check that out for the first time and last time in my life.
If that happens, absolutely. Hey, we can broadcast live, Horse Radio Network, from Fashion Week.
From Fashion Week. That'd be a first, that's for sure.
I think it would be fun.
It would be fun.
We could do it. Cover all the equestrian-inspired lines that are coming out, tragically.
Well, the carriage people have been trying to get me to come up forever because we support the carriage people in New York and the drivers. And they've been trying to get me to come up for forever and do a show live from a carriage. But we haven't quite figured out the logistics of that one yet. So maybe we'll combine the two. So
we'll combine them.
Yep. Get hopping there,
so
Emily.
Yeah, exactly. Get hopping. Get this lined up.
Get this done.
Definitely. I mean, that's the objective. We want to have a good time. I know there's all this talk about building content and shows and what people want to hear, but really we're just here to have a good time.
That's right. And also sell some clothing.
Right, exactly. Yes, priorities.
We want you to be the next big fashion mogul. If the Kardashians can do it, for God's sake, you can do it.
Right? Yeah, I hope so.
You actually have talent. So that's one thing you've got going for you.
I don't know. We're about to find out. This is definitely going to be a big, big year. That's 2015 for old S Equestrian.
Well, of course, it's sequestrian.com. And better yet, follow them on Facebook. Just search for S Equestrian, and that's spelled E-C-E. That's how you spell it. Thank you, Emily, for joining us today. We'll be back here tomorrow. Emily will actually be back tomorrow because she's our celebrity on the CelebrityEquityMFG.com Celebrities Trivia Challenge. She'll be playing one of our listeners, trying to redeem herself in her awful showing the last time she stopped by.
I'm going to be like nose in the books tonight. I'm going to be studying up on all kinds of just random facts. I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be all like tired, you know, pulling an all-nighter.
You've heard Jennifer's questions. There's no way in hell you can study for these because they're
kind of out there. That's the hard part. They are. They're so hard. All right. Well, we're going to do it. So I'm looking forward to it, and I will talk to you tomorrow.
And I just heard from our New York City listener. We have one, Ellen, who just said, okay, you're invited to New York City. So apparently I'm going to have to get up there at some point to New York City. I've never been to New York City at Christmas time. I think
is beautiful.
That'd be the time.
It really is. Totally. Rockefeller Tree. I mean, it really is. Nostalgia.
I just saw that the Rockefeller Tree came out of Pennsylvania this year. So near where we used to live. So, it came out of that area. It's heading up there today, I understand.
It is always beautiful to watch the lighting.
Thanks, Emily. You can listen to our show every day of the week, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern. We're always doing something a little different and fun, and we are continuing that, of course, this week. We on Friday, will be doing a special episode, our annual holiday gift-buying episode with Equestrian Collections will be stopping by. So you want to join in for that. This is the first time we're doing it over here on the Horses in the Morning show. Jamie, Jennifer, and I, and Debbie from Equestrian Collections recorded it earlier. It was a lot of fun, not your typical gift-buying episode, I might add. We had a lot of fun, and you're going to want to take a listen to that. Get you in the holiday spirit and out buying those gifts. All right, that's it for this month. We'll see you again next month, beginning of December, Emily.
Awesome. Thanks, Glenn. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Are you going to be down here? You have to come up and do it in the studio with me.
Totally. I can't wait to get to Florida. I'll be up there for sure.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, everybody.
All right, talk to you soon, guys.
We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. I'm looking for the closing music as to why I'm trying to stall here because I can't find it, but there it is. Okay, good. We'll see you.
Later.